what's best for your health care. Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Stop letting others tell you what to do. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
A big Hollywood mystery that didn't take very long to solve. USA's Chris Barnes explains.
The man who took off with actress Frances McDormand's Oscar for Best Actress arrested, as TMZ says, the suspect who had lifted it from her table at the governor's ball after last night's Academy Awards ceremony was booked on felony grand theft charges. The man had made off with the statue but was reportedly stopped just outside by a photographer for celebrity chef Wolfgang Puck. The photog gave the statue to security. The Oscar was soon reunited with McDormand, who had won it for her role as the grieving mother in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Legislation on Capitol Hill is screeching to a halt despite loud calls for action on guns and immigration. Student survivors of the high school shooting in Florida clamor for action on gun control. But the Republican majority in the House is moving away from the hot-button issues that have dominated the first 2 months of the year. GOP Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is signaling that his chamber won't take up gun reform this week. Instead, the Senate will take up a banking reform bill, even though President Trump challenged lawmakers to pass a sweeping background check bill in the wake of the school shooting in Parkland, Florida. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
Weather this afternoon, partly sunny with a high near 45. North wind, 11 to 13 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 25. North wind, 3 to 7 miles per hour. Tuesday, increasing clouds with a high near 45. Light and variable wind becoming southeast around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night, rain likely before 10 p.m. Then rain and snow likely between 10 p.m. and midnight. Then snow likely after midnight. Cloudy with a low around 32. Southeast wind 5 to 9 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 70%. New snow accumulations of less than 1 inch possible. Wednesday, more snow. High near 36. East wind 13 to 16 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. New snow accumulation of 3 to 7 inches possible. Wednesday night, a chance of snow, mostly cloudy with a low around 29. Chance of precipitation is 50%.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm the host, Larry Cartwright, my co-host, Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We use our own phones, etc. At least there's no traffic jam getting to work in the morning. But anyway, what we do is we try to help people who have someone in their family or they know someone or work with someone who has a mental health issue. And we try to do help in many ways. One of the ways we do it is we offer a 12-week class called Family to Family for anyone who, like I said, either knows someone, has someone in their family or whatever. And it covers medications, side effects of medications, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. And it tries to get the person taking the course to feel what it's like as the person with the illness. And that way it helps them understand a little bit more about what their loved one or their friend or whoever is going through. We also run a support group once a month at right here in Flemington at 52 East Main Street. It's from 7 to usually 8:30. Hopefully it gets over by 9. But it's strictly confidential. Anything is said there is kept there. And people come and sometimes they meet people who have gone through what they're going through or are going through the same thing at the same time. So consequently, it's well worth it. Everything we do is free. There's no cost for anything. There's, like, if you take the classes we offer, there's no cost for the books or material or anything like that. You do have to register for the classes. You don't have to register to come to the support group, but you do have to register for the classes because the classes are only allowed to have up to approximately 20 people. So consequently, you know, they're forced to register. If you have any questions or anything that we can help you with or you don't understand or you'd like some answers to, you can reach out to us 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And we don't man the line 24 hours a day. We don't have someone, but we have a lady that does do it twice a day, and she transfers the messages. If she can't answer them, she'll send them to my wife or I or somebody, and we can get back to you. But we promise we will get back to you in a decent amount of time. And that's 908-284-0500.
And today, we are very pleased to welcome Vivian Franson. Vivian is author of The Straight Spouse, a memoir, which is a love story about a woman who is married for a dozen years to a man who turns out to be gay, and how she journeyed through depression and an eating disorder before finding peace. Vivian has been a freelance writer, editor, and proofreader for more than 30 years and has a master's degree in public administration and a bachelor's degree in sociology. Welcome, Vivian.
Well, thank you, Tracy and Larry. I'm so delighted to be here to talk about my book, the subject matter of my book, which is a true story, a memoir, something that really happened to me.
I got to say, it says you've been doing this for more than 30 years. Now, you don't look 30, so. Yeah, I'm sucking up, okay.
We're off to a great start.
So, Vivian, just explain what you mean by the straight spouse, in case anyone's...
I'd be happy to do that. I'm going to do that by reading just a few sentences because it was a term I had never come across until I read it in a book. Mm. So here's a moment I'll read. It says, I only cared about how I might fit into the author's definition of the straight spouse, which was unfamiliar in rather awkward terminology she used throughout the book. Just the sound of this label made me cringe. So now I'm the one who needs to take on a new identity as the straight spouse, I wondered. The label seemed so strange to me. I could understand its utility for sociologists in describing the phenomenon of couples in mixed orientation marriages as shorthand for women being married to men who turn out to be gay or bisexual, and men being married to women who turn out to be gay or bisexual. But I didn't want this label imposed on me, reducing me to a one-dimensional artifact of the complex person I really am. Let's face it, how many little girls dream about how they want to grow up, fall in love, and become the straight spouse in their happily ever after marriage? None, in my opinion. I couldn't see myself embracing this label, allowing Victor's same gender yearnings to define me in this way.
So, Vivian, you've been through quite a lot. Tell me, why did you decide to write this book?
Oh, there are so many reasons why I wrote this book. Let me just briefly tell you three of them. One is that precious few memoirs are written these days from the straight spouse perspective. You can find plenty of books that are written when a mother or a father come out as gay or when a son or a daughter come out as gay. But there are very few from the straight spouse perspective. Also, in the growing number of coming out stories, the so-called straight spouse is always given short shrift. Developing empathy for the woman who is married to a man who turns out to be gay always takes a back seat to the drama of the husband coming to terms with his sexual orientation. And that really is the third reason why I wrote the book, is I want to help readers develop empathy for that perspective of the person who's married to somebody who comes out as gay.
Can I ask you, I know we spoke before we were on the air about my son and his mental health issues. For the first 6 years, I wouldn't even talk about it. My wife would want to talk, and I'd go in the other room and read a book, or I'd get in the car and go down to the truck stop and get coffee. It's not that I wouldn't have done anything short of murder to help my son. I just couldn't talk about it.
Right.
People would ask me how the family. I'd say, oh, Paul's doing this, Scott's doing that, Sherry's doing that. Remember, I had four kids, you know. So what was it like to write your personal story in your situation? You know, that to me, I would think, would be just as hard as it was for me to come out and say,
Well, there's a good reason why this book just came out in 2017, 6 months ago. But the story happened in early 1990. It covers 4 years of my life from 1990, 1994. And from talking to people who know a lot more about well-crafted memoirs than I did at the time I started writing, they have told me that's very important with a memoir to allow plenty of time for reflection. So to answer your question, yeah, it was hard to write. It was harder to live. The writing was easier than the living of it. However, I must tell you, for me, I am terrified of being misunderstood. And I think that really gave me pause to think about, well, how am I going to write about this love story? How am I going to do it in a way that people will really try to understand all the feelings involved, all the uncertainty, all the hurt, all the pain, and not become a bitter person, which I am not. And I also do not play the blame game. That's not what this is all about. So to answer your question, actually, writing the book was healing for me.
Okay.
But I also can say that what you just explained is that when I'm meeting a lot of people, and it's amazing how many people I'm meeting who are saying, oh, I know somebody, something like that happened to them. And I say, oh, my, tell me more. And she never talks about it. And how are people going to understand the perspective if women like me remain silent? Which is another reason why I wrote the book.
You wrote the book to help other people who are going through it. Because when you were going through it, there were no resources, from what I understand. You couldn't find a book? Tell us about it.
I would have done anything back in 1990 to have come across a book like this. Remember, 1990, this is even before I started watching Oprah. So as far as I was concerned, I was the only woman in the whole world who's ever gone through this, and I really felt alone.
Right. And Vivian, I know if you have some stats. It might be a good time to jump to that.
Sure.
You mentioned an estimated 2 million men and women in the United States have been married to a homosexual partner or bisexual.
Right. Actually, back in 1992, I did come across a book. It wasn't a memoir, but it was kind of a textbook that talked about somebody interviewing various people who had gone through this situation. And in 1992, I read that there were an estimated 2 million people who have been married or who are married to people who are gay or bisexual. That number, as a sociologist, I tend to quibble with the research behind all those numbers. And frankly, when it happens to you, you don't care about the 2 million. You're just thinking about you. But I think it's helpful to know 2 million people, that's the population of Paris, France. That's more than the population of Philadelphia.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's like the population of twice as much as Rhode Island. So we're not talking about a very rare kind of situation. It does happen a lot. And those are just the people who tell you about it.
Let me ask you, if your partner was bisexual, would it have been any different?
It's really hard to speculate, and part of my journey, which the reader will find, is I really held out. I was determined to make my marriage work no matter what was going on.
Right.
My husband had indeed told me that he was struggling with same gender feelings. Those are the words he used. He was struggling with same gender feelings. And I thought, well, yeah, that may happen, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're gay. So to answer your question, there really was a lot of feeling on my part to give him every chance possible.
Okay.
To be bisexual, I mean, that would be his call. And that's another important thing about my book is this is not my husband's journey. This is my journey.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great question for him. But I think it certainly would make a difference. It's interesting how one reader has told me once they read the story, because it is, let me also say, it's a gay-friendly story. It's
right.
told with great respect and dignity, integrity.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's, one of the readers told me, they said, oh, okay, now I'm reading your book. Oh, so you're not anti-gay. You're anti-secret. I said, precisely. That's what it's all about.
Right.
If you know what's going on, you don't want to be the last one in the world to find out your husband's gay.
But one thing I thought was interesting is you went through the whole discovery with him. So you said it took how many years before the two of you came to this conclusion? It was nothing immediate.
Right, and I wasn't really part of the conclusion at all. It was his journey. But mm-hmm. what's interesting is sometimes I think, in my case at least, it was because we were in the marriage. Our marriage was a safe place for Victor to begin to come to terms with what his life was all about. He was 33 years old, and when this happened, and I'm also very lucky because. I think I'm lucky because it wasn't some strange way to find out what was going on. He actually told me. It was we're coming up to the anniversary. It was St. Patrick's Day.
Wow.
And we're neither Catholic nor Irish, but we were celebrating St. Patrick's Day and having a night of heavy drinking. And the cautionary tale there is if you have a secret to keep, you probably don't want to have
drink.
A night of heavy drink.
Right.
And I also, since we're coming up to this holiday, I'll let you know, I celebrate now St. Patrick's Day cold, sober, no drink.
All right.
There you
and
go.
So let's see, 90. But that's almost 30 years ago, I guess. Or I'm not, am I doing my math right here?
1990, sure. We're 2018,
it's
right.
30 years ago when you had this. Okay, so you said here you were devastated.
I was.
Let's talk a little bit about the swirling feelings that you had before and during and after, kind of throughout the whole experience.
The swirling feelings are really important. In fact, in my book, I actually talk about the only words I could try to come up to describe it is drowning in the chaos of my jumbled thoughts. And that also applies to being... drowning in the chaos of my jumbled feelings, because I had such mixed feelings about what was going on. First, I was so much involved with the fact that it took a lot of courage for Victor to tell me about himself, but that doesn't mean it wasn't devastating for me. So that whole feelings. For me, it triggered a whole lot of things for me, and I went in a dark place. I went in a dark place with what I would say profound depression.
Mm-hmm. Let me just back up for a second. We disclaimer, that was not his real name.
Exactly. No, I use fictitious names in my book, except for myself and our dog Champ.
Okay. Right.
Your dog's not going to care, right?
No.
And up until that point, you had a very good marriage.
We had a fabulous
There was
marriage.
Really no clue sexually, let's say, that there was something off there.
Right. We met in college. I do call him Victor, and that's why we're talking about Victor in the book, because I have great respect for not having to reveal his name. But we were college sweethearts. We got married 2 weeks after we both graduated from college, and I had no doubt it was a happily ever after marriage. But I was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Did you find out when his gay, quote-unquote, feelings originated? Were they back in college, or were they back in high school, or...
The book will tell you how, actually, it includes an excerpt from a letter that he wrote to me. and it's in his words, and he talks about having known a lot longer than when he started to talk to it to me about it. But again, that's
what I was thinking.
Right.
That, you know, in his mind, he probably knew it
even before he was married.
Right. Actually, in the epilogue, I did find one study done by the Pew Charitable Trust that I think had some insight. It was only a survey of among a little over 1,000 people, but it really does give some statistics on the fact that people do think about it before they start talking about it. And that the average age, if I'm not mistaken, of and it's a little different for men and for women, but we're talking about on average here, the median age when gay adult men first felt they might be something other than heterosexual straight was 10 years old. The median age when they knew for sure their sexual orientation was gay was 15 years old. And the median age of the first time they told a family member or friend about their gay sexual orientation was 18 years old. And then for lesbian adult women, the numbers are a little bit different, 13, 18, and 21. And bisexuals, it was 13, 17, and 20. So what that means is that there's again, studies, they need to know a whole lot more. But the point is that this is not unusual. There have been people who have been married 30, 40, 50 years. Some people go to their grave without ever having resolving their sexual orientation issues.
Right. When you went into depression and eating disorder, did you seek help or did you fight it off on your own, or how'd you handle it?
Well, for 3 years, I pretty much was living on hope, trying to be that supportive wife who loved my husband no matter what. And was helping him to give the space that he needed to work on his own issues. And when he actually decided he was going to move out, that's what triggered me deciding that, wow, I was hoping so much we could make this happen, and it's not going to happen, and now I feel incredibly so alone. And that triggered a lot of work, including going to a dark place. To let you know, though, when the revelation happened in 1990, I'm a very smart woman. The first thing I did was say, I don't know what's going on with you. You have issues to deal with, but I got to get myself to a therapist stat. I need some help with this. I don't know what to do. And I went to a clergy person. I picked up a phone and found a Cracker Jack therapist who you learn about in the book, and I must say that he actually saved my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I did seek help from the very beginning,
right?
Even though but things got worse after he did move.
Well,
out.
Yeah, I'm sure they would.
Better for him, by the way, but worse for me.
Well, yeah, but you know,
yeah.
Right. But
and you continued with the therapy then after he moved out, or did you
absolutely.
Step it up or?
Absolutely, and that's actually when the eating disorder kicked in, because after he moved out, I mean, I didn't plan to have an eating disorder. I was doing really well at work, so it was like the best of times in my career and the worst of times in my personal life. And I just realized, you know what? I don't feel like eating anymore. I don't think I will. I think I'll stop eating. And I started to lose weight. And I could use to lose some weight, so that wasn't an issue. But then it got really extreme. And within 3 months, I was meeting the definition to be anorexic. And people wanted to put me in a hospital in Philadelphia.
Right, right.
And so that's the trigger for that.
I think you said you were down to, was it under 100 pounds or 100?
106 pounds, and I'm 5'10".
Yeah.
106 pounds is pretty skeletal.
Mm-hmm.
And what's scary is even when I had a breakthrough and decided, okay, I'm going to regain my will to live, your body lags behind. And it was really hard to come back from that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I credit my therapist for helping me figure out how to make that happen, and then having a whole healthcare team of people who work together to help restore. But it's the will to live. That was key. That I actually refer to it. It's a little strange because I'm not the typical anorexic patient. In fact, I think it would be the opposite, that I'd put on 150 pounds. That was more natural for me. But I actually term it as situational anorexia.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy to say that I'm not in that state anymore.
You like food. And what did it take? You said a therapist. Was there any other intervention? I don't believe you were ever hospitalized then.
No, but the threat of hospitalization was pretty effective. I went to Philadelphia to see an eating disorder specialist, and he took one look at me, spent about 20 minutes with me, and said, "We've got a bed for you right here." And I said, "Oh, you better talk to my therapist before that happens." And, you know, I'm not like a 20-year-old that you have here. And he actually enlightened me to say, well, there's quite a few people here. Age is not, these
right.
are not 16-year-old right. wannabe model twiggies. These are people having a hard time, and they need the structure of a program. So, yeah, I came pretty close to that. So, if anything, my book is an excellent commercial for the value of a good therapist. And to go early, because you cannot go it alone.
And you obviously found a good therapist right away. It was a good match. You didn't have
to. It did.
To.
And actually, in my case, I was working, I went to the human resources person in my workplace, mm-hmm. who is somebody who was a friend, and I said, I need some help. It's not a work-related problem. It's a personal problem, a family problem, and she's the one that made the referral, and mm-hmm. I'm so glad she did.
How did your friends and family react to your situation?
Well,
if they did.
Right. if you're asking how supportive they were.
That too.
Right. I'd have to say not so much. And the reason for that is my fault, because I kept it a secret.
You
I did
too?
Not. Yeah, I did not want anyone to interfere with Victor coming to terms with. I didn't want people trying to influence him. I didn't want people talking me into anything or out of anything. It was very much of a secret. The only people who knew that I told were my therapist, and then I did go to a clergy person mm-hmm. who, unfortunately, back in the 1990s, didn't have a clue what to do with me or
right.
my situation. I'd like to think, mm-hmm. I'd like to believe things have gotten better since then, but that's another reason for the book. I especially want to reach out to clergy, gay-friendly clergy, to help them realize it's not just the drama about the person coming to terms, but it's also the spouse, the husband or wife.
Yeah, I know, like, we wouldn't talk about it. You know, I wouldn't talk about it, but my wife and I wouldn't let other family know what our situation was with our son.
Right.
You know, at 8, oh, he's fine. Yeah, yeah right. You know?
Well, it was a secret, and the thing is, you want to be able to say something to somebody to either, if they could actually help, I would have told them, but I didn't think they
right.
could help, and
right.
I didn't understand how much I needed emotional support from other people besides a therapist. I thought I could do it alone, and I got myself in some trouble for making that decision. I will say, once people did find out, and I wanted to make sure Victor was the one telling the story. It wasn't my story. It was his story to tell. And then people, and of course they saw my weight loss and all kinds of things, and then people did rally. And feeling for both Victor and me, no, not taking sides, but feeling for both of us.
You kept his secret. You were totally supportive, even though you were feeling betrayed, I'm sure, on some levels.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the will to live. How did you get through a really bad day?
Well, that's a real good question. It's one step at a time. I was really lucky that my career, my work, was a real anchor for me, and
sure.
I had good contact. And even though people didn't know the details, the nitty-gritty details of what I was dealing with, people were kind to me.
Mm-hmm.
That makes you want to live. When you hang out with people, when
sure.
you can connect
right.
with somebody, that's the whole key. And, you know, after a while, one thing that was really powerful for me, I didn't want to let my therapist down. He had worked so hard with me. I didn't want to be one of those statistics that didn't make it and checked out. And that was a pretty powerful motivation as well.
You wanted to be a success story.
I
for your
did
therapist.
Want to be a success story, and I am.
Uh-huh. Well, that's true. Let us fast forward a little bit. Okay, so at some point he moved out.
Mm-hmm.
Three or four? How many years into the initial conversation, would you say?
It was 3 years.
3 years.
3 years for us. And actually, now that I've met other people who have gone through this, that's pretty much the normal. 3 to 4 years between when you find out your husband or wife may be struggling with these issues and when a decision is made about what to do moving forward. Let me also say there are plenty of mixed orientation marriages. Not everyone decides to no longer be married.
Right.
But in our case, and also a lot of people have children. In our case, it was a child-free marriage by mm-hmm. choice. And so we did not have the added complications of thinking of how either staying together or a divorce would impact on children, which in a way was a down point for me, because people who have children can kind of focus on the children and what's best for the children. For me, I had the dog to think about and myself.
And tell us what happened to the dog.
The dog actually was Victor's dog,
okay.
But he decided when he moved out that the dog would be in the way. And so I had no problem at all saying the dog has a forever home with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to work that well. And that dog, I'll tell you, that dog helped save my life too, because there were times when I would wake up in the morning, and being very anorexic, people may not realize you get very, very weak. You don't even think as clearly as mm-hmm. as when you are fully in a good nutrition mode. And so I would ration out, okay, I have enough energy to go up and down the stairs once a day. That's all I can do. And so I would have to plan everything, like, okay, I can only do those set of stairs once. And it would be knowing when I woke up, you know, the dog has to go out the backyard to urinate. The dog has to be fed. I may not want to get to the grocery store, but I got to get to the grocery store because I got to get dog food. Was a real motivator. Plus, when you have a dog, they're so joyful. Even when I'm feeling really down, a dog is just so helpful. So glad to see you come home. It's, you know, you don't want to mm-hmm. let down your dog
right.
either.
Right.
So how are you now with Victor? Are you in touch at all? Is that relationship totally severed or what?
I'm glad you asked that question, because the precious few books that are written, true stories about being married to a person who turns out to be gay, most of those people wait until the partner is dead. It's often part of their story. In my case, I'm real happy to say that Victor's very much alive. I had to track him down when I published this book. I wanted to get his permission, and you need to have written permission for this, I learned. You have to have written permission if you use lyrics from a song that he composed for our wedding,
right,
which
right.
I thought was wonderful, and I wanted to use that, and also excerpts from a letter, which revealed so much about him. I really didn't want to paraphrase it. Mm-hmm. So I did reach out to him, and he was gracious enough to say yes, and then asked me, well, when the book comes out, let me know so I can buy a copy. And I said, oh, no, you will get a hot off the press copy, which he did. And so to answer your question, I had not had contact with him for many years, but I did track him down thanks to Google and other ways. You cannot hide.
No, exactly.
And the really good news, let me just say, because it's a bit gutsy of me to write such a personal story and publish it, because it has a lot of personal information in it. I have protected people's identity by using fictitious names of people. But at the same time, it's important also because I'm a reporter by training. I wanted to get things right. So the who, what, where, how, when, the fact-checking was very important to my process. And just to follow up, although I don't continue to have a strong friendship with Victor, he did let me know after he read the book. He complimented me on my good writing, which is what he's always been supportive of my good writing. But here's what he said. He said, I have extraordinary recall, and
you do.
Not anything about my writing is inaccurate or insincere. I'm very grateful for that.
Because he probably could have asked to see a draft ahead of time. I don't know if you would have done that.
He could have asked, and I would have said no.
Yeah.
he could write his own memoir, if you like. But again, and that's why this book took 6 years and 8 rewrites to get it right, to get it in a place where I felt I was doing a good job of letting the reader know what my perspective was. At no point do I try to speculate on what was going on in his head. I don't know. So mm-hmm. I'm telling this our love story from my perspective. Perhaps he'll write his own memoir someday.
Mm-hmm. Now you have another love story after this.
I do. And this is good to let people know, especially anybody who might be listening to the program, who either has a loved one who you think might be going through this or might possibly someday go through this. I'm good today. And one reason for that is I actually decided to give love a second chance. It took a few years, and I will tell you there's probably another book I could write about what I made people go through to prove to me how heterosexual they are. Because I have to tell you, one thing that happens from this experience is I decided, okay, everyone I meet is gay or lesbian. Let's just go with that. And I do make that assumption when I'm in a room of people. I always assume people here are gay and lesbian, unless they want to tell me something that suggests otherwise. And frankly, I don't care if the whole world is gay and lesbian. I just don't want to be married to somebody who's gay and not know about it.
Well, just so you know, I've been married 53 years. So.
Okay, good. Congratulations.
Four kids.
You can write a book on a happy marriage, that's for sure.
My wife could write a book putting up with me.
So I will say I do indeed have a second husband, and he's been incredibly supportive about me telling my love story about a former marriage. The one thing he does request from now on when we're anywhere and I introduce him, I must introduce him as my second husband. So there's no confusion between him and Victor. And again, I'm so lucky and blessed to be able to have a marriage with a wonderful man who loves me and I love him.
That's right. Awesome. Right. Let me ask you, I know that with our son's situation, there were days that they were beyond belief. Mm-hmm. What did you do since you were, like, almost alone mm-hmm. in your difficult days? And you've had them, I know.
Right.
You had to have. I mean.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I did is I read. I've always been a reader.
Me too.
There's actually a line from a movie called Shadowlands about C.S. Lewis, and they use the quote that we read so that we know we are not alone. And I've always been an avid reader. Again, a natural that I would write my own book, I suppose. However, I've spent most of my career helping other people tell their story, not
right.
tell my own. So to get it through those really dark times, a phone call away is always my therapist when things are really drastic. But I had a lot of little pride about not wanting to interfere with his day either. So oftentimes it would be to try to read. I do have a strong faith in God, and that's happened throughout this whole process. But I couldn't read in the Bible anything about a straight spouse in the Bible.
Right.
So there were some disconnects there. But I've always very confident that, you know, there's a purpose to me. But when you're in pain and hurting badly and isolate from other people, that's just really dangerous.
It's true, because finally after 6 years, mm-hmm. There was a woman who was in charge of intensive family support services at the hospital. And my wife drugged me to her support groups.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, she convinced me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it may sound weird, but everybody does it in their own way. My way was, I have a son, and I had a funeral in my head. And I could visualize him in the casket.
Mm.
Now I have another son, and he's got mental health issues. Mm. And that's fine. That's okay. You know, I can live with it. I can help him. And that's how I got through it, where I could start talking about it. And obviously have been doing it for the last 20 years now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but it was the way
But that like, was like grieving in a sense.
You've oh, got, yeah.
And you were grieving too during
Oh, sure. definitely grieving sure. what could happen and then what actually did happen.
Right.
And just being so devastated. Again, for some people, life is full of curveballs. And this one was a doozy for me. Mm-hmm. And I think those moments when you're really dark and depressed, you have to reach out to somebody or something that helps you get through it.
We're going to jump ahead for a minute and give contact information. Let's talk about the name of the book. You have a website. It's for other people who are straight spouses. Is that correct?
It is, but I think anyone would enjoy reading this book if you want to feel a little more informed and develop empathy for people in this situation. My book is called The Straight Spouse, A Memoir. Again, my name is Vivian France, and it was published in 2017 by Open Door Publications. It's available at your local independent bookstore by order. You would just go in and say, oh, hey, I heard about this book. I'm interested, The Straight Spouse. You can also get it at Barnes & Noble on order. You can get it at Amazon as an e-book or as a paperback book. Mm-hmm. And I do recommend anyone who's interested in learning a little bit more to go to my website. It's called straightspousememoir.com. Again, all those letters together, straightspousememoir.com. In particular, you're going to find a page there called Resources. And that is going to help people who may be in this situation, or if you have a loved one who may be in this situation, to provide some ways for people to get help. And I'm so glad, Larry, you told us about your experience, because since my experience in the 1990s, there's now something called a Straight Spouse Network. And I've started going to those meetings now. They meet. They're no charge. They happen in many different places. I actually go to the Straight Spouse Network meeting in Levittown, Pennsylvania, which is just 15 minutes from Princeton. It's not hard to find. It's a group that's facilitated by somebody who's also was a straight spouse and also wrote a memoir. That's how I learned about the group. And what's interesting is I would say there's anywhere from the four times I've been there now, a dozen to 30 people who come, and more it's men coming. Mm-hmm. Men coming to realize that they need support, emotional support, because they've just discovered their wife is struggling with same sex or declaring that she's lesbian. And and there's real power in coming together when you're going through something.
Right.
And those have been really helpful. Boy, I sure wish. Those people are so lucky. I sure wish there had been a support group back in 1990.
Mm-hmm. How often do they meet?
Every 2 months, this particular group does.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder if there are any in New Jersey.
There are in New Jersey. If you go to my resources page, I've actually made it really easy. You can just click on a link that will bring you to the Straight Spouse Network, where there's a listing by state and what towns have a group. Okay. So there is help available. And the support group really makes a difference for so many people.
Yeah, and the thing, too, is like the support group like you're talking about is people have gone through it who are facilitating it.
Right.
That's just like our support group. Mm-hmm. If I'm facilitating it, we've gone through it. My wife and I have gone through it.
Right.
When I teach the family-to-family class, we've gone through it.
Right.
You know? So it's not like just somebody coming along and say, oh, teaching it, you know? We've been there, you know?
That's such an important point, Larry, because when I go and I thought, well, gee, I hate to take up space because these people are going through their crisis right now. And the facilitator said, no, Vivian, we love you here. People need to see that there's light at the end of the tunnel and that you can get through this. And so I felt very welcomed. Mm-hmm. And again, I do a lot of listening there.
A lot of
empathy. And that makes all the difference when people feel like they care for you.
Right.
But
right.
Do you feel you have let it go? I mean, did you go to this group because you still are dealing with it? Or is it the feelings of anxiety and all those terrible things, are they all over with or are they still recurring?
Part of it is because I feel a need to give back.
Okay.
A little bit, I feel a little sorry for myself that I didn't have that group for me.
Mm-hmm.
But also for me, going to this group just really inspires me to want to help other people better understand what it's like for people in this mm-hmm. situation. The need for emotional support, not just from a therapist, but from family and friends, and also knowing to stay away from people who are not going to be part of the solution. I know mm-hmm. people have told me in this world there are two types of people, the drains and the fountains. Oh. And the drains just really drain your energy. And when you're low already, you want to stay away from the drains. You want to hang out with the fountains. Those are the people who can really help you out.
Right. That's true.
That's beautiful. Right. So what kind of advice, you say they look at you, what kind of advice do you give to somebody who's going through this?
Most important is to listen, I think, and just see where people are at. Everybody's story is different. It's yeah. not a matter of giving advice.
Okay.
Oftentimes people will bring up a topic and someone else will say, oh, yeah, I had that. Here's what I did. And then somebody right. says, well, I did something exactly opposite mm-hmm. and it worked for
right.
me. It's trial and error. That's what life is all about, trial
sure.
and error. I think it's specifically the messages, though, for me, and I can only speak from my own experience, is that even though I'm in a real good place now and life is good, when this happens, you never get over it. You absolutely can get through it, but to me, you never get over it. And in this whole message of, you know, you cannot go it alone. You can go to your church or your temple or a writer's group or your local library. Just connect with people. Whether or not you feel you're ready to tell your own personal story is beside the point. I actually like to recommend my book as a good litmus test. Just like I'm a big fan of Jeanette Walls. She had a book called The Glass Castle,
oh,
which
yes.
is also a movie
uh-huh.
now. A very powerful, both the book mm-hmm. and the movie. And I actually would give The Glass Castle away as a gift to people. I love the book to begin with. It's just good reading. But I also did it as a litmus test to see, gee, if you can handle the content of Jeanette Walls' dysfunctional family, you might be able to handle me telling you about myself. And if people got the book and said, oh, I don't get it, I kind of like back off, man. That's not somebody I want to. And I think you could do that with my
right.
book as well. It's a litmus test to see how comfortable somebody is. I will hasten to add, though, it's probably not the best choice for a bridal shower gift. And,
I agree.
Any other time, I mean, that's just, if there are concerns, by the way, mm-hmm. it's good to talk about. And I'll tell you, at some point, I feel like I'm on a one-person crusade because I would like to reach out to clergy and encourage them that just part of the premarital counseling process, that they simply add one more question, and that is to ask the couple when you're talking with them, to ask both of them, do you have any unresolved questions about your sexual orientation? And if so, have you talked to your partner about it? Mm-hmm. That may be rather controversial, and I'm sure you'd hear from clergy on how they feel about that. And would that have made a difference with me and Victor? I'm not even sure. But just knowing that that question was asked before you take marriage vows, I just think if somebody's struggling, it's really helpful that you tell somebody in your relationship before you take the marriage vows that that's still an area of questions.
It's ironic because the church I go to, the female pastor is gay.
Ah, wonderful.
And that's local right here in Ringo's. Yeah, no.
You know, that makes me think it's probably a gay-affirming church.
Oh, it is.
Which
it
means...
which is great. You know, right. I mean, you know, I'm old. But
here we go.
I am. But 30 years ago, I would have never gone there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've come to realize that just because they look at their sexuality different than I do,
mm-hmm.
or the average person, say, does, that doesn't mean they're not human.
Right.
You know, that doesn't mean they don't have a heart, that they don't bleed when they cut themselves and et cetera, and that they don't have feelings, mm-hmm. and they do. And, you know, I'm friends with a couple of guys down there that who are gay,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter to me anymore, you know.
It really is. It's okay to be gay or straight or whatever we are.
Oh, whatever, right.
That's that's just a fact of life as far as I'm concerned. Although, again, that some people will disagree with me on that. But one I know. I do know for sure that we have to speak the truth and live our truth. And it's really good to know that you can go to a church and speak your truth and live your truth.
Somebody said to me, "You go there? That the pastor's gay." I said, "Is she any good?" You know, this was before I actually went. I was telling them I was going to try it. I said, "Is she any good?" You know, I mean, I don't care what her sexuality is. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not going there for that.
Right,
you
right,
know?
Exactly.
So, yes. You know, but it was just, it's just kind of ironic, you know.
Mm-hmm. But. Vivian, we have just a couple of minutes left, and I'm wondering if there's something that we haven't covered that you really would like to talk a little more about.
I have learned that once you do start talking about your story, you never want to stop talking about your story.
Go ahead.
It's interesting, Vivian, because I've known you for when you were married to your first husband, mm-hmm. and I did not know about this until the book came out.
Right. Well, let me also just say one thing that really also inspired me to write the book is I came across a book by Frederick Buechner. Mm-hmm. I talk about this on my website. He writes a memoir called Telling Secrets. And what he does in there, he helps us understand that we all have secrets, which are both very telling and very important to tell. And he actually makes the case that, quote, secrets kept buried can cause harm. And he talks a lot about when you have the don't tell, don't trust, don't feel mindset, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble. And that really was the key mm-hmm. for me. I was in a don't tell, don't trust, don't feel mindset. And I'm so glad I got out of it.
And really, for you, it was more of a situational depression.
It was. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. But long-lasting and very severe.
Well, and I'm glad in those dark days that I thought, well, self-deprivation. It was really self-deprivation more than starvation. But if somebody is thinking, you know, they've had enough of this world and it's time to check out, I'm glad I wasn't a gun owner.
Yeah, really.
You know, you get a little bit more time to make sure you're really on that right trajectory. So, again, not to be morbid about it, but I really do want people to realize you must take seriously when somebody is depressed. People need help.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
And, you know, that's why NAMI is there. You know, they can help them, you know.
Makes a big difference.
It does. It does, because you're talking to people who, like you said, have been there and mm-hmm. done that. You know, they may not be in the depression that the person is, but they've been depressed,
mm-hmm.
and you know, or they've been similar circumstances or whatever.
Right.
So it's always good to know. You know,
I think the last message that you asked me what else to cover, I really welcome any opportunities to speak to groups, whether it's a book group, a church or synagogue book group, discussion group, doesn't matter, library, anyone who wants to actually develop more understanding of this perspective. And I think it can make a difference, because I think especially a church, when you hear something like this happens, more so than gossip, people need emotional support. And so when you hear this happens, it's not just a juicy piece of gossip to pass on to somebody. You can actually say, hey, whoa, things are going on. What can we do as a church or as a friend to provide emotional support to both the person who's dealing with these new issues
right.
and somebody trying to figure out how to move forward?
So, Vivian, how would someone reach you? Would they go to your website? Is that the best way? Or do you want to give out an email address?
The website is the best way. And actually, you can send an email through my website to me.
Okay.
We're going to
go over the name of that website again in case somebody is tuning in late or didn't get it the first time. Go ahead.
All you have to do is go to your computer or your favorite device and key in the words StraightSpouseMemoir.com, and you'll be there.
Right. And you actually have two hard words in there to spell for people who are spelling challenged, so why don't we spell it out?
Okay, straight is STRAIGHT. Spouse, S-P-O-U-S-E, Memoir, MEMOIR.com.
Great. Well, Vivian, it's been terrific having you on. I appreciate the light that you're shedding on your life and your bravery, and I hope you can help a lot more people.
And we do thank you very much for coming. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
And remember, folks, same time, same station next week, and mental health really does matter.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, Parent Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.